and welcome to Rewatchable episode 191. We are covering Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 5 episode 2, Real Me, and Angel season 2 episode 2, Are You Now or Have You Ever Been? My name is Caitlin and I am joined today by superfan Karen and newbies Mitch and Kristen. How's everyone doing?
Hi, good.
Hi. Pretty good.
Awesome. So, before we get started, just to remind everyone how to get in touch with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at @re_watchable. You can comment on this post at hypable.com, and you can chat us up on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So before we get started, just a quick little note that Selena has decided to leave the show. So we are mixing things up a little bit. I will be your new rotating host with Karen, and we are going to be bringing in some guest hosts to fill in our fourth superfan spot. So, but this week we have all regulars. So to get everyone used to our voices, let's start with fun facts. So Kristen, let's start with you. What's your fun fact?
Let's see. I have a not so fun fact in that we're getting a ton of snow today. But my fun fact is that last night, Karen and I went and did a little bit of shopping and I got this adorable little Sven plush I have added to my Sven collection. And he's very small, but he has a little snowflake like on his tongue. They, like, sewed a little foam snowflake to his tongue, which is sticking out, and he's very cute. I have added to the Sven collection.
Very nice.
Did you see him in Moana?
Yes, yes. I got very excited.
I freaked out on her behalf. I was like, it's Sven, it's Sven.
I just saw him in the new Frozen ride in Epcot. That could be my fun fact, that I went on the Frozen ride in Epcot, and it was a very long wait for a very short ride. That's like kind of the theme with Disney, isn't it? In Orlando in general. But it was still really fun and really cute. It's actually kind of like scarier than I'd expect for the age group, because there's a point when Elsa's like, let the storm rage on. And then you like turn around and you're like going backward, but you're still kind of going fast. And it's kind of freaky. And I was like, if I was like a little girl on this ride or a little boy on this ride, I'd be like, ah, Elsa, save me. They're trying to make it, like, cute and fun, but it was originally, like, a Viking ride. But they just, you know, put in animatronics for Frozen, essentially. So I don't really remember the Viking bit. I think it might have been a bit scarier. Like, heave-ho, we're coming for you. And it's like, run away. But now it's just like, Elsa sang a song to you. And now you're just going away because you're done. And it's like, no, this is still kind of scary.
And Karen, what's your fun fact?
My fun fact is that when we went out shopping last night, we went to a restaurant and I ordered buffalo mac and cheese, which is always like, it's a go-to meal, especially as comfort food, because I like spicy things and also I like blue cheese. And there's blue cheese crumbles and that just makes the decision for me. This thing was basically cheese soup with noodles and chicken, and I loved every second of it because I really like cheese.
Oh my God, that sounds fabulous.
It was so good. Kristen did not think the same thing, but that's fine. I ate it all.
Karen, you need to go to the Melting Pot restaurant if you haven't.
You know, I haven't. I really should.
It's literally cheese soup. You know that, right?
I could probably handle Melting Pot because I can control how much cheese goes on each item.
True.
Like, I don't mind melted cheese on things, but, like, I don't like it to be, like, drenched in cheese. So
I often just go there just to get the cheese part. Like, I don't get the rest of the meals. I just get, like, four courses of the cheeses.
I'll just eat the cheese with a spoon. It's fine.
Oh, I've been there.
All right. So my fun fact, I guess I will just do another gauge update, and that this last week, with the behaviorist, we got Gage outside the apartment and he went like 10 feet out of the apartment before running right back in. But we are making progress. He still won't go if his leash is on and I can't get him out on my own, but the behaviorist has been bringing her dog for them to play, and then we try and lure him out with her dog and he'll finally go out to see her. So we're working on it because he needs to be able to go outside so I can go home for Christmas with him.
So, do you just have puppy pads right now?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
I mostly don't mind, except that it's just very expensive, and my apartment does not smell great no matter how many candles I burn.
Oh my god, yeah, welcome to the life with cats. Oof, I know how you feel.
But he's very good about using them, so that's not a problem. I just, you know, I think he must be bored just hanging out inside, and there's a dog park, like, right across from my apartment that I'd like to take him to run around, and I think he'd be happier if he could stop being afraid of the outside.
He has such a sweet disposition. I love hearing updates about him, because I can just imagine that little face just looking up at you, like, begging you for that popcorn or all that stuff that he does. He's adorable.
He's a sweetie. He's lying right next to me right now. So, all right, so let's jump right into discussion. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, 502 The Real Me. Our synopsis, was this written by Ariana?
Yeah, it was Ariana's turn.
It says, in this episode, we enter Flashpoint in Earth 2 timeline in which Buffy has a hella annoying little sister named Twilight who thinks she is on the Vampire Diaries. Meanwhile, Harmony is back, and this time she's brought minions, and Giles' midlife crisis has him buying sports cars and magic shops for kicks. Which, accurate. So, we found out in this episode more about who this random appearing sister is. Her name is Dawn. And newbies, I'd like to get your first impressions at Dawn. Mitch, what did you think of Dawn at first?
You know, honestly, as much as Ariana writes, the universe decrees we must hate everything Michelle Trachtenberg is in, I don't hate her as Dawn. I think I like her because there's a mystique around her character, and she's almost like this evil Willow witch that I was envisioning, but she's just a different character. So that's fun. It's kind of like we predicted that in a way. But I guess that saying there's going to be an evil witch on Buffy wasn't, like, too much of a stretch of the imagination, right? I'm assuming she's a witch. I don't really know. It's not a spoiler if I did guess it right, which has happened before. And people are like, how dare you spoil everyone? And I'm like, no, it was about werewolves. People were like, you knew there were werewolves. You shouldn't have said. I was like, I was just guessing. But I don't know. Do you think she's a witch, Kristen?
I mean, right now, she thinks the whole witch thing is cool. And yeah. On this show, if you want to be a witch, like, you can be. You may not be good or great at it, but
right.
She could be. Who knows?
Because, I mean, I just want to know what her deal is like. Did she just literally sign her name with the devil when she wanted to become part of Buffy's life? And now I don't know if we're going to call this, like, a new verse, you know? Like, how we have Wishverse. Do we now call this, like, Dawnverse? Like, is this, like, the dawn of all time? I don't know. Is that what it's meant to be?
I don't know. Joss Whedon has said that, you know, the intention here was to drop us into this new situation without knowing anything. So the characters all assume she's been there all along, but we're the only ones who know what's wrong. Yeah. Fun fact also that when they were casting Dawn, Sarah Michelle Gellar was the one who suggested Michelle Trachtenberg, and Dawn was originally conceived to be 12, but then when they cast Michelle Trachtenberg, they made the character 14, but the first few scripts were still written as a 12-year-old. So if she seems like she's acting even younger than she should be, it's because the first couple scripts were written with a younger, even younger sister in mind.
I did notice that. Did you, Kristen, when you're watching this episode?
I mean, yeah, that bridge between like 12 and 14, it's a little more subtle. If she was trying to play 16 or, you know, a little older with a 12-year-old script, it might be kind of hard. But, like, you know, 12 to 14, it's a little different, but you're still kind of in that pre-high school mindset. Like, you're moving into that world, so it works.
Well, it reminded me that when we started, isn't Buffy 16?
Yeah, I think so.
Right. And, I mean, you could essentially say she's 15 when we really first meet her, and that's when Angel's stalking her and she meets that first random watcher guy. So it's not like we really can give Dawn too much of an excuse to be young, because Buffy, as vain as she was played in that episode, we still saw her getting pretty into the world when she comes to Sunnydale. And I guess that comes with burning down a gym with vampires full to the brim. But I'm wondering now if this is actually an accurate representation eventually of a 14-year-old, because now they have to kind of build off this 12-year-old character that they've started, and it's like, how do you just transition into an older person? I don't know how you do that smoothly when you've started so young.
Oh, I'm sure that it'll just be a little more subtle that she's old. Like, as the scripts adjust to her age, to Michelle Trachtenberg, I'm sure it'll just kind of feel like when we got to know her, it was a little more, you know, a little more intense, because you're paying really close attention at the beginning to everything Dawn does, because we don't know her. So it's like, you know, you're paying very, very close attention to every little thing she does, trying to kind of figure out who she is and what she's about. And I'm sure as it goes on, it'll feel a little more natural.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me of the younger brother on The Vampire Diaries, Alina's brother. It's been a while since I watched the show, so you'll have to help me.
Jeremy.
Out,
Kristen.
Yeah, Jeremy. And he starts off, he's kind of like a scrawny kid, but then, like, he did that Piranha movie, and then he became, like, super buff, and then he died and came back, like, 12 times, so maybe she just needs to, like, go film one of those B-horror movies that she's in, and then she'll be more adult.
I mean, this is the first episode we really saw her in, so I'm sure as it goes on, we'll get to understand exactly who Dawn is.
Karen, do you remember how you felt about Dawn when she first appeared?
I mean, definitely confused, which is kind of the point, because when you see her at the end of the last episode, you really do think Buffy's going to be like, who the hell are you? And then she just turns back and they both yell, Mom. And I think that's a really great moment, because it clues you in that something is very different here. And it's really well done. But still, I was very confused. And in terms of Dawn's personality, like, I think she's kind of funny. I think she does add a comedic element and a new layer to the show. But she is annoying. And I am also annoyed by Buffy. So I kind of don't blame it all on Dawn. I think their relationship is a little tense, and I think Dawn is reacting to that. But I also think she does a really good job of being that maybe stereotypical little sister who kind of just wants to ruin everything.
Yeah, I remember when I was first watching this, when I was much, much, much younger, that I think I liked more Dawn more, probably because I related more to her back then, because I am a little sister. I have two older siblings who are significantly older than I am, and I was closer to her age when I first watched the show. And now that I'm watching it being much older, I'm like, my God, she's so annoying. So there's perspective on how old you are when you're watching her too. I also feel like it's worth pointing out that Dawn's presence has been foreshadowed a few times in previous seasons. Just want to point out in a couple of the dream sequences that Buffy has with Faith, and in Restless, we hear that she needs to be back before Dawn. So,
whoa.
And that she, yeah.
Oh. Okay, now I get why everybody was pointing that out.
Okay, is this that Little Miss Muffet part two?
I was so confused. What?
Remember, there was a part that was something about Little Miss Muffet. I could have sworn that Faith was saying that in a dream.
Yes, this is completely relevant, because remember what the crazy guy says to Dawn when he meets her outside the magic box? He says, "Curds and whey."
Is it like a food?
So it is.
Like curds? Is that some kind of food that I should know of?
Well, like Little Miss Muffet sat on her tuffet eating her curds and whey.
Oh, that's part of it.
Yeah, it's the whole rhyme.
Okay, cool. Wow, yep. That's weird. I made the connection without even knowing I made the connection.
Yeah.
I guess that you guys are kind of hoping for us to do that, aren't you? Because your super fans are like, we know the answer. And you're like, just get it already.
I was going to bring it up later, but you were ahead of me. So nicely done, Mitch.
Oh, thanks.
But yeah. So if you think that Dawn is coming out of nowhere, it's clear that she's been planned for a while.
And so there is that. Why? Like, while. What are we doing? Yeah. Like, why does Dawn have to come in? Like, I guess we need a big bad of a sort, but is she that?
All the way back to the season 3 finale in the dream sequence with Faith. Were there making the bed, and she says, Faith says, miles to go, Little Miss Muffet counting down from 7:30. So
7:30, is that like, see, are there 7 seasons of Buffy?
There are.
Is this talking, I don't know if there's 30 episodes in the last season, but that'd be weird. That's the only thing I can think of, like 7:30 or 7:30 might be like the time of dawn at this time of year. I'm lost on that. I don't know where to go with that.
I don't know.
That's not another part of the riddle, though, or of the original rhyme, right? 7:30.
No.
That could be like a room again, Kristen. Like, you know how we just had whatever that room was that Maggie was making Adam. So it could be, because they tend to do that. They tend to drop numbers that are like, you know, all the monsters were talking about that room. They were like, oh, did you hear about insert number here? So I feel like it could just be something like that.
Definitely possible. I mean, every time, okay, when Faith uses numbers like that, which is probably why I didn't pick up on the phrase, like, I heard it, but I didn't pay any attention, is with the whole 5x5 thing, every time she just uses random numbers, I assume that she's just, like, substituting it for some random phrase, so I don't think I paid attention to the 7:30 part, but that's interesting, it's, yeah.
But do you have any idea, though, Kristen, like, what is Dawn's goal? Why did the spatter to foreshadow this whole time that we're now like, she's here, so now what? Like, I guess we are waiting for the other shoe to drop because she's like, she doesn't know what I really am. And I'm like, okay, but well, we don't either, so I'm so lost.
Yeah, I think my biggest question about Dawn is she's kind of been like retconned into it. Like, they all, you know, act like she's been there all along. Like, they know her. It's not a surprise. But for us, it's a giant, you know, huge new thing to get used to. So I'm curious as to whether from here on out, they just always see her as someone that has always been there, or if at some point they're going to realize that Dawn has now appeared. Like, is this a character who has been inserted into this reality that they will at some point realize Dawn didn't exist and what is going on? Or is she now just a part of the canon from here on out, has always been there, and we just didn't meet her until now? So I'm sure we will find out one way or another as the season goes on, but that's my biggest Dawn question.
I'll just say this much. If Buffy is anyone in the Scooby gang specifically, she's Scooby-Doo himself, because she always sniffs out the problem. Ha ha ha. Because when, here I have another pun, when Danny Strong was doing his little verse episode, it dawned upon her that she was like, no, this is not okay. He's not really here. So I feel like it's going to come to the point where maybe we meet the people that created that universe for Doyle. No, crap, that's Gilmore Girls. I forget his name in this show. I just call him Danny Strong. Whatever that character was.
Jonathan?
Jonathan, yes. I feel like we're going to see those people come back, Kristen. And it's weird to me that we didn't see them originally, but it could just be like, that was your test, Buffy. We were trying to see if you would figure it out when Dawn eventually comes. So that's why we had that Jonathan episode. Because it still feels random. That one doesn't make sense, but that would connect it for me.
I don't know. We'll see. I'm one of those firm believers in it'll all figure itself out. Just watch another episode.
You obviously have not been burnt by Lost.
No, I've watched like half of the first season of Lost. I've not yet been burnt.
Oh, okay. Just wait.
Someday.
Alright, so speaking of Dawn and these strange foreshadowings, what do you think was going on in that scene where the kind of seemingly crazy guy comes up to her and tells her she doesn't belong? Do you have any newbie theories, Mitch or Kristen?
Well, between that guy telling her that she doesn't belong and her constantly saying, like, Buffy doesn't know this about me, she'll be sorry. Or, like, I don't know exactly how she phrased that, but she basically was like, there's something about her that Buffy doesn't get or know. And I'm wondering if Dawn is in on this. Like, is Dawn aware of her, like, not having been there? Or is she, like, just is she kind of a victim of whatever circumstance is going on? So I'm assuming that at some point Dawn will realize that she hasn't always been there. Whether she's always been Buffy's sister or not, I don't know. But she has not always been in this world the whole time.
Yeah, I'm wondering that too, because part of what Dawn feels like to me is like a bit of a victim, because she does kind of play the role like she already has been the sister. And it's not like she feels that she needs to do that. It's that she believes that. Like, she's very, like, even in her voiceover, she's very kind of clueless about Willow and Tara being in a relationship, and that kind of feels like a genuine little sister thing. Or even, like, her crush on Xander, like, I've liked him after all these years, it kind of felt like. So I wonder what is going on with her, like, mental state, and what could be brainwashed into her. Maybe that's what we're seeing. We've already kind of seen that element introduced recently with Forrest or Adam or even Zombie Maggie. So we really could go anywhere, I think, with, like, even saying that she was, this could be something of Drew. I don't know, because Drew can hypnotize people. So there are a lot of places we can go with altering mind states to get Faith in, to get Dawn into the place where she believes it enough to make it believable for Buffy, so that she won't sniff it out like she did for when Jonathan was doing his bit.
We shall see how it plays out, I guess. I kind of want to go back to something Karen said before about Buffy, that she seems a little bossier, maybe, in this episode. So how did you guys notice a personality change in Buffy? I'll start with that. Karen, you mentioned it first, so I'll turn it over to you.
I don't necessarily want to call it a personality change, but there is a new situation and a new dynamic, and that is bringing out a different side to her. I think that bossiness always had the ability to be there, because at its core, Buffy cares about her sister and wants to keep her safe, which is why she gets so mad when Dawn doesn't listen to her. It's because she loves her and she doesn't want her to die. We've seen her act this way with her friends before. She can get very mean and angry when she just wants them to stay put and stay safe and not put themselves in danger's way. So I don't necessarily think that this is a personality change. I think that it's just a new dynamic, and that Buffy has a new element to deal with, and this is how she's reacting to it.
Yeah, as someone who has both older and younger siblings, watching this, it wasn't that I thought that Buffy's personality changed. It's just having a younger sibling, you do kind of feel a little responsible for them, but you also, knowing that you have someone there that inherently is like a part of your life because they're your sibling, they can't, you know, it's harder for them to escape, especially when they're that young. They're in your life, and you can kind of like push them around. It's clear that Dawn kind of looks up to Buffy, as much as she also seems to have issues with her being the Slayer and what it means to be the Slayer's sister. She also looks up to her, so Buffy has that influence on her, and just watching them kind of figure that out in these first couple episodes, that I'm sure is going to be interesting. But like, here it's the first time we've seen Buffy being someone's big sister. It's very different from her being the lead of this group who are all her peers and could choose to walk away. Like, Dawn is there and she's not going anywhere, so seeing that is, it's just a different aspect to Buffy's personality.
Any thoughts, Mitch?
I kind of like the way that Buffy's treating Dawn. I think that Dawn deserves it. It's probably Michelle Trachtenberg's little bratty face that I can't stand. I'm sure she's a lovely woman in real life, as I often say, but she plays this character very well.
Yeah, I don't think Buffy is necessarily wrong in anything she says. Like, she tells her to stay put, and then Dawn runs out of the house, which gets her kidnapped and Anya sent to the hospital. Like, and, you know, don't invite vampires in. Guess what? She invited a vampire in. Like, you know, I don't think Buffy's necessarily wrong in anything that she says, that Dawn just needs to be more careful, and that if the assumption is she's been here all along, she grew up with a sister who is the Slayer, she does know the rules about dealing with supernatural things. So being careful is important, but she does have kind of an attitude about it. And part of me wonders if it's like a pushback against like, hey, suddenly like Flashpoint universe or something. But
I haven't seen Flashpoint, but I have a question of whether or not we're going to see the two Buffyverses connect. So we have Buffyverse and Dawnverse is what I'm going to call this one. I don't know if this one has a name, and I think it might be a spoiler to tell me if it has a name, because that tells me that it sticks around or not. So I think I need to stick there as a newbie and say, like, if we are to see these two Buffys meet even, like, we could even see a scenario where it's a much different Buffy, like she was in Wishverse, where she was very hearted and she had that scar on her face. We could see Buffy without Dawn. That could be kind of a cool thing to then compare their arcs, like, you know, a season or two later to see, like, how Dawn then affected our Dawn versus Buffy as opposed to that Buffy versus Buffy.
See, I think this is still the same world, and I think this is still the same Buffy. I don't necessarily think there's a whole nother world. We're not talking DC heroes here. So I feel like Dawn is just, she's been planted in here for us, and, you know, as to how she got there or why she's there, who knows, you know, for me, who knows how, if we ever find that out, but I don't think that she's like from another actual universe. Like, I think her presence is just a new wrinkle for us. Does that make sense?
Well, this is the thing. Like, yes, you make as much sense as you possibly can talking about this scenario, but time and like relativity and in different universes will almost never really make sense. And that's why I've kind of liked the Harry Potter effect, where you can't go back and change time. It's always happened, except for Cursed Child, I guess, kind of messes around with that, but let's pretend that didn't happen for a bit. That's what I want Buffy to do. I want it to stick to this. It's always happened, it always will, but it's already kind of broken that, because we already we already do have different verses, Kristen, with once again Wishverse. Even like these things exist in a way that they can interact with each other, because that vampire Willow came over and she met our Scoobies. So that's where I'm saying, if we have that Buffy versus Buffy come in, that could be some kind of shakeup. And they tend to, I think, like to play off of that. The show likes to show how these choices will then affect the characters' growth and their lives and who lives and who dies because of it all. And that gets messy. And I'm a little bit nervous. I'm nervous to see how the show handles now three existent universes, even four with that Jonathan episode. We have a lot going on. I guess that's the same universe, because they kind of were like, oh, it was all a dream. That was weird.
Hashtag no comment.
and then my brain goes to the, am I overthinking all of this? Should I just, you know, like, sit here and take it for now and we'll find out later? Like, you know, you can bat it around a million times, come up with a million different theories, but, you know, you just kind of wait to find out what comes next.
Yeah, that's what I did with Lost. I'm with you, because it's the same concept. It's like all these different universes, they get confusing and you're like, I don't even want to speculate anymore. There's too much going on. I'm going to just buckle in and see how Dawn affects everything.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the other plot in this episode is that Buffy's arch nemesis Harmony is back. And she has a plan to kill the Slayer. And who was happy to see Harmony again?
That was nice.
Me. I mean, she's genius.
She's cute.
Love having her back.
I liked it, and I like that she didn't die. I like that she's coming around, like, whenever they feel like it, but it still reminds me that if we're bringing in actors like this, can we please, please remember Rat Amy? She really could solve everything going on every time with her magic. Just change her back out of a rat after she's done. We're good.
It wouldn't be an episode of Rewatchable with Mitch if Amy wasn't mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
So, Harmony is back, and she brought minions with her. So she's got her own little gang, and nobody is particularly impressed, including her minions, who turn on her at the end. So poor Harmony. She kind of sucks at everything, basically. So
she was kind of cool in the final battle against the mayor. Like, I guess she liked the idea of it all, even though she just got bit in that episode. I don't know if she actually, like, fought, but now she seems like she's just flopping.
She does succeed in kidnapping Dawn, because Dawn is an idiot and runs out of the house when they're under threat. But first she tries to call out Buffy at her house when Buffy isn't there. So anyone really love that scene with Xander and Harmony?
Well, I picked it as my favorite scene. The whole plan, and the fact that her plan was to throw a rock through the window, say, come on out so we can kill you. I couldn't get over it. It's like, Harmony, that's not a plan. Like, come on. It's genius. It's so Harmony that her plan, her evil plan, was to tell the Slayer to come out so they could kill her. It's just, it's amazing.
It wasn't it great seeing her and Spike interact again? That was so cute. I was like, ah, I missed this.
Yeah, Spike is not impressed either.
No.
Yeah, but he's still kind of like, I think he's still carrying a flame for her in a weird way, because he's like, basically he's like, oh, you have a little bit more gall than I expected. And she's even like, oh, I've been training. I'm a little bit better at this kind of stuff now. When I guess she is a little bit, but still pretty pathetic.
I feel like she read a self-help book, and that's where...
How to vampire better.
Either that, or she found, like, a vampire checklist, like, have minions, check, attempt to kill Slayer, check.
She feels like a SpongeBob villain, like.
Yeah, like, she's coming up, she's trying to check off all the things that any good vampire should do, and yeah, she's getting there.
Mm-hmm. Was anyone actually worried for Dawn or Harmony in the final battle scene?
Ish. I'm trying not to worry about everyone on the show, because then my heart would be split into 1,000 pieces.
I wasn't actually worried for Harmony. I figured that Dawn and Harmony would both make it out of there, just because you need them. But I will say, when imposing vampire dude, whose name I cannot remember, kind of like went rogue, I was a little worried for a second there. But, you know, you knew Buffy was coming to save the day.
Oh, like the tallest of all of them? The football player, probably, I think, or jock or whatever.
Are we expecting to see Harmony pop up again and be Buffy's continuing arch nemesis?
I certainly hope so.
I want her and Drew to have a fight, but then Drew just to win and then it be done. Like, I want that to be Harmony's exit. You know, for Drew just to come up and be like, who's this little rat you've been keeping around? And then she just, like, rips out her heart and then it's done.
Mitch, wow. I appreciate you and everything you do.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I don't know how to top that. Okay. Last kind of thing going on in this episode is Giles is basically having a midlife crisis because he buys a new sports car, which is hilarious. Who loved Giles' car? So I did.
Forearms in said car.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
He had his sleeves rolled up, didn't he? I feel like this is one of those sleeve rolled up scenes.
The fact that it was red reminded me of, like, Bullet and, like, the Full House, you know, red car. I was like, that's just special. It just, for some reason, took me there, and I was like, oh, the red convertible makes a comeback. I love it.
Now I'm imagining a parody of, like, the Full House song using Buffy clips. And this is, like, this being, like, the intro bit. Like, when they're driving over the bridge, it's just Giles with his sleeves rolled up, driving with Buffy and Dawn, and then, like, yeah.
Somebody hush down do there, that kid.
Turn
us.
Off that radio.
Please. I'm just picturing Giles as Danny Tanner now.
That's perfect.
God, that would have been a vastly different show, but also make it better. Maybe better.
Because could, because when he gets into, like, the end of the episodes and he's, like, consoling someone, you know, just like Danny Tanner does, you can turn on that really, like, cheesy string music and be like, aw, come here, Michelle.
And then the, aw.
Oh, the audience, yeah. The audience. And you wouldn't have to edit Buffy at all. You could just, like, insert that in and that'd be fine.
And also for the laugh track for all the funny quips.
So cute. It's like the opposite of the Big Bang Theory without the laugh tracks. If you added laugh tracks to Buffy, I'm sure it would be much more hilarious. Or more painful, depending on your
surroundings. That's quality. Giles buys one more thing in his midlife crisis. He buys the magic shop.
Fist pump. I've been waiting.
I just love how impressed with the shop he is. Like, as soon as he sees the profit margins, he's like, wow. And then, like, he's impressed with the size. And he's all, it's so cute just watching him, like, put it all together in his head. Like, I could do this. I'm a librarian. I can run a shop. It's genius.
It's nice that he has a thing. He didn't have a thing for way too long. And that was weird because he's, I don't know, like, you'd assume someone with the name Ripper has, like, always something cooking in the pot, right? But he was just kind of hanging out and, like, oh, guess it's back to London for me. Oh, here's my girlfriend. She's kind of cool. And that was it. But now he's like, yeah, let's go, like, sell magics. But then everyone's like, you're going to die. And I'm like, no. Because they're like, no, you don't understand, Giles. You don't buy a magic shop in Sunnydale. You're not going to live long. And now I'm really nervous.
It's like the defense against the dark arts position.
Yes!
It is. It's literally just like it. Aww. Voldemort put a curse on it, and I'm really scared that Giles is next. Although he could just retire or go away, kind of like, you know, Lupin or, yeah, I suppose, Mad-Eye did. So that's kind of cool. If you need to
he at least knows what he's getting into. He's lived in Sunnydale. He knows. And he knows how the others have fated. So hopefully Giles will just... he'll be impervious to the curse.
I hope. Plus, I honestly
can't. He's got a slayer on his side.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the show without him. Like, if he was really to leave for London after this or anything. I hope it's not true. I hope he breaks the curse.
All right. So, any final thoughts on this episode of Buffy before we move to favorite scenes and lines?
Did someone pick the Anya bit for their scene where she's playing life? Because that was cute. She was, like, angry about the pink kids or something in the car, and then they were like, you're winning. And she's just like, ah.
And she wanted to trade the kids in for cash.
Yeah. That might be illegal, Anya.
Let's hope that she doesn't have offspring. That could probably be a bad scenario.
I do want to give Anya a shout-out for trying to get Dawn back in the house after she ran out.
Yes. I really liked that Dawn thinks Willow is, like, the coolest person ever. Considering how Willow sees herself and how we saw Willow when this whole thing started, like, to see Dawn kind of picture her as, like, you know, Willow is the older sister I wish I had, but no, I have Buffy, who's the Slayer, and is, you know, so much better, and blah, blah, blah. Like, I love that she sees Willow as the cool... you know, I wish I could be her kind of thing.
Yeah, because Willow likes school as much as Dawn does.
Yeah, which is so, just, it's cool.
And they're chess partners, so apparently Dawn is a giant nerd.
Which is awesome. More nerds.
All right, so let's move on to favorite scenes and favorite lines. Karen, what was your favorite scene?
Oddly enough, mine was Tara looking out for Dawn, which we didn't really talk about, but the way that Tara feels out of place and can see that same feeling in Dawn and actively goes to kind of comfort her and be there for her, I think is really telling of Tara's character. And it was just nice to see, especially because, like, you're kind of, you spend this whole episode pretty much being annoyed at Dawn because she is screwing things up left and right and she is acting kind of stupid. But then you have Tara come in and kind of explain, like, you know, she's just lonely and she just doesn't feel like she belongs. And I understand that feeling too. And it gives you a different perspective on Dawn, but also gives you a little insight into Tara, which is nice.
And that makes me feel like Tara's smelling out what's going on, too, because she's very perceptive about illusions and people who don't belong where they are, like when we had that Faith Buffy body switch. So I feel like she's sensing something going on here with Dawn.
Did anyone else notice Tara's reaction to Willow saying she's one of the good guys?
No. Oh, no, I need to. Did you notice this, Kristen?
I'm trying to, like, think back to when that was in the episode.
It's in their conversation in the dorm room, and Willow's kind of hugging her from behind, and they're talking about it.
They're in the dorm room in this episode? I'm totally blanking.
Oh, you're talking about... Okay, I was a little confused. I thought you were talking about, like, Willow was talking about Dawn to Tara, but Willow was talking about Tara.
To Tara.
Yeah.
About Tara being one of the good guys. Or was she talking about Dawn?
They were having the conversation about Dawn, and then Tara was saying, you know, I know how she feels, and I don't really feel like I fit in this group, and I don't even know that I want to, and Willow kind of says to her, you know, you're one of the good guys, and Tara has an interesting reaction.
I can imagine her kind of, like, sniffing, like, you know, looking off and being like, like, the little twitchy thing she does when, you know, she's, like, hiding magic dust underneath her bed, so you never know. She could be evil Tara as well. I hope not. I like Tara. But it seems like more and more likely as we go on, because she's very much associating with this new Dawn and taking her under wing like a little evil minion. So I'm like,
I think I just assumed that her reaction was, like, more just surprised that Willow includes her in the group, since Dawn, or since Tara doesn't actually, like, feel a part of it. Like, I think I just kind of saw it as Tara being like, wait, you think I am? Because I don't think I am. But maybe there's more to that.
She's like a fallen angel kind of character, Tara. Could you see her being more like that, Kristen? Like, I don't watch Supernatural, but I think there's a character on the show like this where he's like the devil or an angel or someone. Is it Castile, maybe? That's what she kind of feels like to me, and that's me saying, like, once again, I've never seen Supernatural, but it feels like she's like, I'm not good enough to be, like, one of the powers that be, but they threw me into Earth, and now I'm just doing my business because I have to, and I feel bad because I betrayed God, and I'm the fallen angel, or whatever, like that. So I can kind of see that. I don't think she's purely evil.
I don't think Tara has that much going on. Like, she does not come across as more than a girl who does magic or, you know, a witch. I don't think she has any sort of more supernatural backstory than that, but I don't know.
But then how do you explain away her hiding the magic dust when they were doing that demon-finding spell?
Well, she's got a history with magic. I'm not saying she doesn't, but
no, like, I'm the demon, basically, never... is what I think she was saying with that, right?
I don't know. I cannot remember, but who knows? I'm sure Tara's backstory will come out at some point.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, this is, once again, we can only speculate so much until we just find it out. But I think we're sniffing out the right things, Kristen, because the super fans are very silent.
Hashtag no comment. Kristen, you already told us about your favorite scene. You want to say anything else?
Just that this is why I like Harmony, and this is the only reason I'm really glad she survived this episode, is that I hope we get more plans from Harmony, and yeah, it's just great.
And Mitch, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was that Faith revealed that she magicked her way into Buffy's world at the end of the episode, and it was like, okay, yeah, we all knew that was coming, so what's next? I'm waiting for that big
Dawn?
Reveal. Oh, oops, I meant Dawn. I keep telling them... It's like these really,
Faith was not in this episode.
No, it's these ethereal names that just, like, are obscure concepts, and I'm just like, okay, yeah, Dawn, Faith, whatever. They keep switching around in my brain.
Dawn is a very real thing in the world when the sun comes up, you know?
I guess, but I'm thinking more of it, like, prophecy-wise.
Right. And my favorite scene was the confrontation between Harmony and Spike, because Harmony is, like, trying to be all empowered woman, and Spike is just not having it because Harmony's a total flake, and, you know, she's like, I have a plan, and he just says, like, step by step what it is. She's like, that's not it. I have a better one. their relationship is so messed up, and it just, I have no love for Harmony, like, as a human being, so I find it kind of amusing.
I wonder how Cordelia is going to react if she ever sees Harmony doing all this business. Like, you're around still? You actually matter?
That would be interesting.
She's almost a better person as a vampire than she was as a person, because she was pretty shitty. Like, the way she would kind of be catty about Cordelia behind her back or to her face, it just was all kind of, yeah, just shitty. So I'm happy that she at least, like, I like her more than she was as a person.
I mean, she's still pretty catty. She's like, you're minions, ew.
Yeah, that's true. She always wants to be the queen bee.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to favorite lines. Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was between Harmony and Buffy, and it's when Harmony, when Buffy finally shows up in the cave to rescue Dawn, and Harmony goes, I think she says something like, "The Slayer, at last we meet," or something, and Buffy just looks at her and goes, "We've met, Harmony, you half-wit." And it's like, Harmony knows that, but she's trying to play into the whole, like, supervillain thing, and mm-hmm. she's so bad at it. And I like that Buffy just has zero time for her. It's great.
I love that line. Kristen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was came from Riley while he and Buffy were kind of, like, I think they were out patrolling, and Buffy's venting about Dawn, and Riley goes, "Back to what I was saying before we were rudely attacked by nothing." Just, I love it, because all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Buffy sees a trash can that looks threatening, and it's not at all. She's just kind of distracting him from the conversation, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, she's having her logicless rant.
It happens.
Mitch, what was your favorite line?
Mine is when they're in the car and Dawn goes, "Hey, there's Willow and Tara." And Giles goes, "Ooh, they haven't seen my new car." Totally breaking out of, like, whatever serious talk they were having.
Yeah, and he's talking about, like, how much, like, the automatic transmission is annoying. And
yeah.
He's like, "Oh, the stupid car. Ooh, they haven't seen my new car."
Yeah, Giles is like a little puppy sometimes. He just gets distracted by things and has to go see them and investigate or show off and play.
And my favorite line was also Giles. At the end of the episode, Buffy says, "How bored were you last year?" And Giles says, "I watched Passions with Spike. Let us never speak of it." And now I'm just like, you know, when Spike was tied up, I'm just imagining them watching soap operas together.
I mean,
everything is amazing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Before we move on from this episode into Angel, I wanted to say that once again, Riley feels so inserted. Like, he has, like, just the role to be there for Buffy, and that's it. Like, he's not going to ever do anything important anymore. I'm really just waiting for him to be knocked off. I don't even care anymore. After that whole thing where he was like, "You slept with Angel when you were dating," I was like, okay, you're gone. Just get out of here.
Hashtag Wonder Bread.
Yeah. Oh, God. Rice Wonder Bread. He's a combo.
He's a rice cake.
He's a rice cake, yeah.
Instead of a beefcake.
Oh. Poor Riley.
To be fair, he is kind of a beefy rice cake, though.
Yeah, he's one of the kinds with, like, caramel and chocolate, not, like, the bland ones.
That's too tasty. No, he's a beef-flavored rice cake. That's way too sweet.
Oh, how did we get here? Please let us move on.
Yes, let's move on to Angel. So episode 202, Are You Now or Have You Ever Been? Which, side note, is one of David Boreanaz's personal favorite episodes. So in this episode, we get to meet past Angel, who is surprisingly not living out of a dumpster in New York, but out of a hotel in McCarthy era Los Angeles. Thanks to a paranoid demon, Angel saves a girl in the 50s, only to have her turn around and kill him. Back in the present day, he moves back into the haunted hotel because he is a very nostalgic, sentimental vamp. So, let's start with this episode. This episode kind of seems like it's messing with the continuity a little bit, as Ariana mentions in her summary that we kind of assumed that he was in the gutters after he got his soul. So did anybody feel like there was something odd about that?
I was confused. I was like, wait, no, he's supposed to be eating rats at this point. I think what it is now is that I don't think they're retconning. I think they're just showing more up until the point where he gets to the rats, because he still has to lose a lot more faith in humanity until he gets to the rats. But then he has to gain faith in humanity once he sees Buffy being magical and he imprints on her, or whatever he did when he was stalking her. I don't know. That still makes no sense to me that he just switches. Because, like, people still treated him like shit when he was trying to be good. So where is his arc going to get him to current day Angel?
I assumed that this fit into his you know, timeline. Like, somewhere in there, he spent some time in L.A., you know, I'm guessing since he was staying in the hotel, like maybe he was just using it as an experiment, and it was a failed experiment because in his short time there, he got hung and killed despite trying to do good. So he just kind of skips back out of LA, back to New York, and then that's when he ends up with, you know, the whole eating rats and all that thing. So, yeah, I just assumed this kind of fit in. I wasn't really super surprised.
I wanted to share some quotes from the episode writer, Tim Minear, who says, Angel in this episode he's cynical, I don't get involved guy, and I thought that was a very interesting place to be. Although he does reach out to someone in the episode, it doesn't take much to push him out of that light. And then in terms of whether this contradicts what we found out about Angel and Buffy, he says, I don't believe he was thrown out of that room in Romania by Darla in 1898 and has been on the street ever since. In the 1950s, that was the beginning of his descent into the streets. So that was the episode writer's justification for him being in a hotel in the 50s.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
I mean, I buy this. This still makes sense. I'm excited to see more Angel flashbacks because I think it's great. It is. It's great to see Angelus. That's still very fun, but it's also less fun, but still necessary to see pre-Buffy Angel.
Yeah, like, were you noticing the kind of, like, sharp edges to his personality in this episode compared to who he is today?
Well, honestly, there were points where I was trying to justify him still being Angelus here. I was like, wait, was there another switch? Is he evil for, like, another little period? Like, did he have to regain back his soul again or whatever happened? So I was to the point where I was like, is he even, like, with a soul here?
Yeah, for me, he's always kind of been broody, you know, hangs out in the shadows. But he just seemed a little rougher, a little gruffer here. He just, you know, he doesn't even really talk to people unless they've, you know, finally gotten behind the curtain. But, like, other than that, he just kind of grunts at them, which, you know, it's kind of Angel. But I'd say I definitely saw a little bit of a difference from current day Angel.
How about you, Karen?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that he is in a dark place, but I like seeing that side of him, to be perfectly honest, because it's so strange to me, the different sides of Angel. On Buffy, he's very dramatic, and his story is very tragic, whereas on Angel, he is usually very... He's silly almost. He's a little ridiculous, but he's still a warrior. And I like that they can combine those two sides into something that maybe shouldn't work, but definitely does. And here, once again, you see a different side to him, and it just reminds you that this man has lived such a long life, and he's seen so many people come and go, and he's come up against so many creatures. And the fact that this is one of the turning points for him, which is why we're seeing this episode. You know, we see him attack the demon or try to look into attacking the demon. It just goes to show you how much Angel has been through and how he has ended up the way he's ended up. And that is always fascinating to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's interesting to see that, you know, for as kind of sharp-edged as he is, like, it doesn't actually take that much to get him to try and start helping. You know, he pretty much on his own goes to that bookshop, which was kind of hilarious, to get what he needed to stop the demon. But then it, you know, at the same time, he does something pretty harsh in letting the demon take all the people in the hotel, basically, to feed on them. So he's not, obviously not the man that we know today, but at the same time, he's willing to help people who seem like they deserve it. Like, Judy seemed like she deserved it, but then as soon as she turned on him, it's like, no, they don't deserve it at all. None of them deserve it. If Judy doesn't deserve it, none of them do. And so he's willing to let them all get, like, fed on by this paranoid demon. So it's an interesting place for him to be. And it's interesting considering, you know, he does have a soul at this point. So he has all of this weighing on him. And it's clear in the present day that what he did at that point does weigh on him, because he, you know, on his own goes back to this hotel to kind of make things right, basically. So I find it really fascinating as well.
There's kind of a quality about Angel now that, despite whatever these humans are like up against, like now he can see past their terrible deeds and still like try to save them. Like Lindsay kind of comes to mind. Like, despite Lindsay being with Wolfram and Hart and being a pain in the ass, like he still tries to help him. And then, you know, it ends up, Lindsay ends up going back to them. But like that sort of thing, like he always, now he seems to, no matter what they've done, he's still willing to help them if they're people, if they're human, you know, demons too a little bit, but they get a little more of the judgment side before he sees them. But like now in the flashback, though, it's like he hadn't gotten there yet. He hadn't seen the human race as like, oh, you know, he didn't see them as like always worth saving. If they wronged him, then they were just as culpable for their actions as they, you know, as anybody. And maybe that's not entirely wrong, because they did try to kill him, but they were under the influence of the demon at the same time. So it's, I think current Angel just has kind of found a little more empathy for them than this version did.
I think it's interesting that you bring up Lindsay, because he, to me, feels like he parallels Judy a little bit, and that, you know, Judy is basically a thief, but kind of accidentally almost. And Lindsay has been working for this awful law firm. They come to Angel for help. He's kind of resistant, but he helps them. And then when they turn on him, like, he kind of returns the favor, because we see with Lindsay, like, he had no hesitation in cutting his arm off in that season finale.
True.
And I guess you could say he's under the influence of demons as well, Lindsay, because he's in this heightened scenario where we didn't know at the time, but he's resurrected Darla. And yeah, it's all very important to him, this whole prophecy thing. So while it's not like the direct influence like this tentacle demon is, it's still comparable, I see, because when you're in a heightened scenario, you might forget how to be a human, how to be decent, because you're so caught up into the destiny and into the emotion of it all, as opposed to how is this going to actually affect other people.
Yeah, I guess for me, I just see that maybe there is still a little bit of that angel in him, because of the way he was unhesitant to maim Lindsay when Lindsay turned down his efforts for help. So it sort of, it doesn't come out of nowhere.
Well, he definitely needed to, too, because Lindsay was about to burn the prophecy. That was just like a dick move. There was no need for that.
But he could have, like, he didn't have to cut his hand off. He could have hit probably another part of his body, but he goes for the maim.
Yeah. He is super power. I mean, are we super sped demons as vampires here? Like, couldn't he just run up and grab it real quick? Didn't really need to, like, I guess he really didn't need to cut off his hand.
I don't know that they have super speed.
No, I'm not sure. Sometimes it feels like they do, but I kind of get my vampire mythos confused, because there's so many. And it's like, okay, maybe.
They're probably faster than humans, but they don't have, like, they're not the Flash.
No, yeah.
So this episode has a very interesting exploration of Angel. It also is very fitting, because it's set against this background of the McCarthy era Los Angeles, when it was very much the communist witch hunts. Mm. And we see very telling signs of the times. Ariana points out the Black family being denied a room, and a gay couple meeting on the down low that Angel notices. So we see signs of the times. You know, Judy herself is part Black, and she was passing as white, but when they found out, she was fired. So, you know, it's all very much a part of the time, and I couldn't help noticing a little bit of relevance for the present day, which made me a little uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something else I noticed too, something very, very smart that the writers of this episode did was that they inserted a bit of the, once again, like we're seeing today, like the assumption that we're going to call these the powers that be, but I mean that for the real world, like politically, know the truth, and they're going to only spew the truth. Because when this bellhop is watching TV, he goes, it's black and white, and he goes, or something like that, and he goes, she's a redhead? I mean, it looks brunette to me, but I'll believe that. And now, obviously, that's meant to be, okay, so that means that we're assuming that people that are accused of being communists just already are. So that kind of blows my mind that they were able to get in that deep and just, like, do something so subtle like that. They really feel like they've got into the heart of this McCarthyism movement here and what it was like to be in this time period in the 50s. It's a very scary reflection of what we're going through today, and it's like, wow, I'm kind of mind blown with just like how like exactly mirrored a lot of this Angel episode feels.
Mob mentality is something that we see very cyclically through history, you know. Mm-hmm. I think of the Salem witch hunts, and we see it again, which is the present day equivalent is the McCarthy era and the communist witch hunts, basically. And so these people were, you know, they were under the influence of this demon. He was making them even more paranoid, but he was feeding on something that they already were feeling. And we have seen throughout history that when people start getting into a mob, that all logic and reason goes out the window, whether there is a demon influence or not. Mm-hmm. So it seems like, I don't know, it works so well to me that this cynical angel decides that he is going to just let this demon have them, because even though they were being like encouraged by the demon to like hang him from the balcony, you know, this was them. Basically, this was humanity, and this is the potential that just regular people have. And for where Angel was at that time, like it's kind of understandable in a way that he wouldn't have any interest in helping them.
Yeah, because as I see it, the way the demon presented his power was that he takes a bit of negativity and then he chews on it and then spits it back out tenfold. So then he's basically taking, yeah, the paranoia that everyone's feeling about the Communist Party, as it said, then making that a much more tangible thing and making it so that they feel like the voices talking to them are real and they need to listen to them and all that kind of crazy stuff. So this is all just, it's kind of creepy to talk about, honestly. It gives me chills. It's so weird. It's very mind-blowing, too. I guess I didn't really feel it. When I was watching this episode, I was just so concentrated on the angel stuff. But now that we're talking about it as, like, a form of media and all this, that I'm starting to feel like this was just meant to be a political episode and the angel stuff was just on the side.
It fits the time period very well. Yeah. So in the present, Angel realizes that the demon is still there, and he kind of brings in Cordelia and Wesley and Gunn to take it on, and the demon is pretty, you know, he's pretty gleeful at how much paranoia he's been able to feed on, and they pretty quickly actually are able to kill him. Angel has a nice electrocution moment, and then Angel finds somebody still in the hotel all these years later.
How?
Judy is still there.
How did she survive?
And in the same dress. I am pretty sure that was the same dress that she was wearing when he left.
Like it was meant to
and
be
I was like
she's frozen in time.
What? Yeah.
If they explained that a little bit, maybe like the demon feeding her, like physically feeding her negative juju.
Yeah, I assumed it all had something to do with the demon and that he kept her alive so that he could continue to feed off of her.
This is possibly the most tragic thing
that
we've seen so far. I mean, can you imagine 50 years living that life?
Yeah. And with what the demon said about her, that she had started to regain her faith in humanity by meeting Angel, and then kind of having that heartbreak, like, just made her this perfect meal for him, and then he just kept her there. The hotel is in complete disarray, and she is still there just being fed on, and that is so tragic. And she's sitting there, like, very clearly when Angel goes and finds her, with a lot of guilt for what she did to him. And she didn't know he was a vampire, so that he survived. So she has had 50 years thinking that she got this innocent person killed. What a horrible existence.
And, you know, as much as I was worried about the how, I think I should just be more worried about the why here, because this show is once again another real-world example that when we start to ostracize and make others feel, this feels like a very after-school special moment for Mitch, so I'm just going to rock with it. That, like, once you start to, you know, make others feel that they're lesser than, and then they turn on others because of that, they're hardened, that doesn't go away. They're going to feel bad because they might have been a good person who's then turned evil by the world or did evil things because of the way that the world reacted to them. And then you're stuck in this negative cycle for the rest of your life. And how sad that you might have to sit in your own misery like this forever unless you find a way to break it.
Newbies, were you shocked to see her there?
No. This show's done weird.
I mean, I didn't necessarily expect her to be sitting there, like, alive 50 years later, but I kind of, when we found out that she hadn't been found, I assumed that we would meet her again at the end of the episode. Like, when Wesley and Cordelia are going through everything and she had no death date, unlike everyone else in the hotel, I knew we were going to see her again, but I didn't know how. And so, you know, him going upstairs to find that she's still there, it did kind of gut punch me. It's like, wow, that's, you know, it is pretty much the most tragic story we've seen so far.
Is he going to use that money, by the way, that he found for something, like to buy some throw pillows?
I assume he's going to use it to buy the hotel because he says they're moving in.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised with his conscience that he's not like, I have to return this money now, like, so many years later. And would it even be as much money as it used to be? As used to have been from inflation?
No, I don't think it really, like, would make any difference at this point, 50 years later.
Yeah.
And the Hyperion's probably not super expensive, considering how in disarray it is.
And its history.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what do you guys think about them? You're gonna move into the Hyperion as their new office, since their last one was blown up.
It's a bit unnecessary. That's a large space for just one little office. Unless we were going to start putting people up after we save them. That could be kind of cool. Like, Angel's home for the weak and restless, I guess.
I was going to say, all I could picture is, like, Angel taking in all the strays. Like, just every time somebody gets added to, like, his little, you know, collection of protected people, like, they get a room. So Gunn will have a room. And, you know, I think that's kind of interesting. And I can't wait to see how they use the hotel for their you know, new home.
That's right. But he could put up all the street kids, and then he could have them work for him and be like his good guy army.
They could have a whole floor.
Wow. But now, so this means that other vampires can't enter? What? So how does that work? Like, if a vampire makes this his residence, does that mean that no one else can enter Angel's house? Or is that just you have to, because he has a soul, so that kind of muddies the water here in the mythos. I'm wondering now, if we bring all these, you know, Gunn and all of his friends in, if that's going to protect them, because I feel like that could be a point of contention, that other vampires are going to try and attack the hotel if we start putting in those people, because they're a big target for that group. So I'm wondering, I wonder if that's going to play out.
Well, Angel's still a vampire, and he had to be invited into Buffy's. So if it's in his name, then anybody can enter. But if they put the building in Cordelia's name or Wesley's name, then it gets a little murkier, because it has to be a place of residence, so...
And it's going to be a place of business.
Yeah.
And they seem to have to sleep there, right?
Yeah, I think Angel will be living there.
Which is why, like, the occult bookstore guy was like, I'm thinking about bringing in my bedroll to keep you people out, because his bookstore was a place of business, not a home. But if he, like, technically slept there, it could become his home, and then it would be protected by that. So
this starts to feel like the love magic of Harry Potter, you know, like what your love will protect, or Felix Felicis even. So it gets confusing.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see if that ever comes up as an issue. All right. Any final thoughts before we move on? This is possibly my favorite episode we've seen so far of Angel. And I can see why it's one of David Boreanaz's favorites.
Totally. He's left to chew on
here. So interesting. I don't dislike this episode by any means, but I'm always caught off guard by how pointless it feels at first. And I like the story. I like the background, but its significance to the overall narrative is fleeting, basically until you get to the end. And it introduces the hotel, which I actually kind of forgot about and was like, oh, yeah, this is the origin of that. And, like, got very excited once it finally clicked in my head, which took way too long. It was embarrassing. But this episode is not very memorable for me. And that might be an unpopular opinion.
I do really like that their new home, like, has a history all its own. You know, we didn't really have a history for the old office, and this place has its own, you know, supernatural story. So I kind of like that they're giving it a second chance, just like all of them are kind of getting a second chance.
Yeah, I was going to say the hotel kind of symbolizes Angel himself, because it has this really dark history, but it's been cleansed, basically, and now can have a positive life moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
I liked how this set the time period too in more horrible ways, where they had the black family that was turned out because they said, I know what the sign says, but it's full. And that was horrible. And then also there's the moment when there's a gay couple that meets up at the hotel and Angel just stares at them. And I was like, why are you being so rude? But then I realized, I don't think he's being rude. I think he's trying to get out on the action. I really do. Like, I don't even think I'm, like, reading into that. Like, that was there. And I was like, okay, I can get, yeah.
I think he just judges everybody at this point.
Yeah.
I don't think he really cares. I think he just judges every single person he sees.
He is equal opportunity judgmental.
He's missing his three sons with Drew and Spike. What can he say?
I mean, you never know. All right, so let's move on to favorite scenes and lines. Karen, what was your favorite scene?
Hands down, mine was when Cordy brings them all their morning drinks, because, God, that was so cute. Like, they're so comfortable with each other, and it's such a routine, and it's not weird anymore. Whereas, like, you know, in the beginning, obviously, when they were getting used to Angel, like, the whole blood thing was kind of either a joke or they were grossed out by it, and now Cordy is just like English breakfast tea and coffee and au pas, and it's just the cavalier way that she approaches it now. I just really appreciate that.
And cinnamon, she's putting cinnamon in his blood.
Yeah. What, I can't try something new?
I wonder if he tastes so great. It. Kind of like in iZombie, how they add hot sauce into their food because it's the only thing they can taste, like extreme. Hot is the only thing they can feel, so I wonder if you can tell. I wonder if you can even feel that frothiness or whatever it would be.
I'm just loving domestic Cordy with, like, experimenting with blood.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, too, because it makes me wonder what kind of relationship Cordelia and Angel are going to have. Are they, because they definitely were lovey-dovey, like, in the dumpster back in, like, Buffy season 2. So I wonder now if this is, like, completely gone or if it's coming back now that she's more serious business. And he's like, I can kind of dig that.
Hashtag no comment. Kristen, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was Angel visiting the magic bookstore, occult bookstore place, because first of all, like, when he first walks in and the guy, like, kind of makes him and tosses him the Bible, like, that was all very well done. But then later on when he, you know, kind of gains the guy's trust a little bit, and he helps him and, like, hands him the giant axe thing. And, like, just that whole scene was really nice. Just good fun to meet meet someone that sees through Angel's, like, vampire-ness eventually. Like, at first he judged him just like, you know, everybody else. But eventually the guy saw that Angel was trying to do good and helped him out.
And Angel was so offended that he thought he was, like, over 30.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Oh, God.
I wonder if that's playing off the actor getting older. Like, you know, David aging as Angel's not meant to be, and they're trying to play off that now.
Can I just mention randomly, I had a dream last night that they were going to do a new season of Angel, and I was like, but how would that work? Because David Boreanaz has aged. I literally had a dream about that last night.
Aww. He's almost like Hugh Jackman, though. Like, you feel like he could still do Wolverine for the next 20 years. I feel like I could still be convinced that David was still young enough.
I mean, he looks good.
Angel. Yeah.
He still looks very good.
Yeah.
But he has aged. For sure.
He just doesn't look like he did in 2000, no. Which yeah. None of us do.
Nope.
Mitch, your favorite scene?
Mine is when Angel is like this proud dad surveying his new home, like, I'm gonna purchase. He was just so cute at the end when he's getting the hotel, and he's like, yeah, this is my place.
Nice. And my favorite scene was Angel, and when he finds the old Judy in her room, and he basically sets her free, and she gets his forgiveness, and then she's kind of able to pass away peacefully. And finally get a measure of peace. It was really sad, but I think it was sweet because she could see that, you know, she hadn't killed him and that he forgave her.
I mean, for all she knew, that he was just an illusion, because she's been gone, kind of been driven crazy for years. So I hope that actually brought her peace. Maybe she was just like, I'm going to buy anything at this point.
Well, she was smiling when she died. So yeah.
That makes me happy to at least know that tortured soul is put to rest.
Yeah. I liked that she got a measure of peace and then was able to die and get this, you know, out of this horrible existence.
Which means she probably won't be the new ghost of the AI team, because we're probably not going to see too much of, you know, Cordelia's ghost. So that's sad. I kind of would like to have another friendly ghost around to, like, warn them when demons are coming in or something. That's always good.
Phantom Judy.
Phantom Judy. That'd been cool.
All right, let's move on to favorite lines. Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine comes from some of the background characters, the mob members in this episode, and it was the actor and the screenwriter were arguing about something, like, I don't even remember what it was exactly now, but the actor says to the screenwriter, don't you use alliteration with me, you hack, and I just thought it was so funny.
I love that one. Kristen, what was your favorite line?
Mine is from the end of the episode, and Cordy is talking about the hotel, and she says, 70 years of violence, mayhem, and paranoia. Bad vibes. And Angel goes, we're moving in. And Cordy says, I mean, a few throw pillows, what's not to love? Like, she doesn't even miss a beat. She's just, all right, we're moving in. I'll get some throw pillows. We'll fix it. It's fine.
I love how agreeable she is with Angel. Like, It's funny, don't get me wrong, like, and I think it's meant to be funny, but also Cordelia trusts in Angel so completely that she's just like, yeah, okay, you know, whatever's next. Like, she is invested, she is here now, she isn't looking to do anything else. This is her number one priority, and it's really nice to see that.
Agreed. Mitch, what was your favorite line?
Mine's when Wesley and Cordelia are doing research, and they're kind of introducing each new backdrop scene for Angel, and there's a point when Cordelia's like, what's the point of all this? And then Wesley's like, ah, well, I mean, clearly he has us compiling incidents, arranging data, organizing information in such a way that, yes, I did notice that, the no point thing.
Yeah, it would help if Angel would actually, like, tell them what they were doing.
Which didn't help Karen make it not feel like it was just a whatever episode. Because you're like, okay, even the characters are saying, what's the point? And then you get it after the fact. You're like, oh, we have a new home for AI. Oh, we get more about Angel and McCarthyism. Okay.
And my favorite line comes at the end of the episode. The paranoid demon implied that Wesley was a really paranoid person, and this really bothers him. And Wesley goes up to Angel and goes, "Angel, you don't find me especially paranoid, do you?" And Angel goes, "Not especially." And Wes goes, "Oh, thank God. I was worried."
Protect that baby. He is so adorable. Pancake Trio, it's so for the win. Oh, I love them.
Poor paranoid Wesley. All right, so that wraps up our discussion of Buffy and Angel for this week. Just a reminder that if you want to tell us about your thoughts on the episodes or if you have things to add to the discussion, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at @re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hypeable.com. You can talk to us at Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And we also love when you read and review us on iTunes because other people can find us and listen to us. And if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will write a soliloquy in her vampire diary about you.
Yes, I will.
Are you really Elena?
I don't know how you can...
This whole time, are you another doppelganger? God, no!
Where are the hot vampires, then?
Okay.
I mean,
we're missing the hot vampires. If you're Elena, then where the hell are they?
You're missing the hot vampires. I have 2 windows in my bedroom.
Hey. All right, let's get into our listener feedback. We got a couple tweets this week. Kristen and Mitch, would you like to take these?
Sure. The first comes from Shauna Evans, and she tweets at Rewatchable, "Judgment, a decidedly mediocre episode, but worth it for Mandy."
Yeah.
I think that's, yeah, definitely true.
I listened to the credits bit, Caitlin. It was great.
Wasn't it amazing?
Yeah, it was worth it, because he's just mumbling around it. It's just so fun. Mine's from Mandy K, at Mandy K, who wrote, "Holy shit, I totally forgot about Darla and Lorne. Show up this early in Angel. Lorne? Do I know Lorne? It only gets better from here, folks." Is that a spoiler?
I mean, we were trying to avoid his name, but...
Okay, never mind. He's the green spiky guy. We're good.
It's not a spoiler. It's not a big deal.
No, we kind of knew the show green spiky guy was going to stay around.
Huh? Like,
Danielle and I had the impression that green spiky guy was going to stay around.
Yeah, it's not really a big spoiler. That's just, he has a name, and that's what it is.
He's just a green spiky guy. I'm cool with that.
All right, and we got a few comments on Hypeable. Karen, would you like to take the first one?
Yes, this is from Tucker Conley, who says, "As much as I love Buffy, I have to critique the fact that we are in season 5 and the characters are still keeping secrets from one another. I thought after they drifted apart in season 4, they would stop keeping secrets from each other. Willow's one of my favorite characters on the show, but I hate the fact that she and Giles are withholding things from Buffy in this episode. It seems like on this front, the characters never truly learn the lessons in this show." Yes. I think, unfortunately, a lot of stories find conflict in the miscommunication trope, which really bothers me. And especially in a show like Buffy, there's conflict coming from all sides, so I don't necessarily think they need to do this. However, such is life. You don't always learn your lessons the first time, the second time, the third time, the 100th time. And I think these characters still have a lot of insecurities, Willow in particular. And it doesn't super surprise me that this is still an ongoing issue.
I mean, I'm complaining about the Winchesters keeping secrets from each other in season 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely plagued the Salvatore brothers more than once, and we are now in season 7. So yeah, it's
and they've lived for like hundreds of years. That's horrible.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, it's annoying, but it's pretty common across shows.
Human nature, I guess.
Yeah, or non-human in some cases.
Demon nature.
All right, and we have one more comment from Hypeable. This one's from Vicky, and she says, "Loved the podcast. I agree with Mitch about Judgment. At the start of season 2 of Angel, I was thinking, enough with the damsel in distress and white knight tropes. Instead, we have an episode where they don't even bother to give the pregnant woman that Angel saves a name. Her background story is addressed in one sentence and so on. At this point, I was ready to stop watching Angel altogether. Fortunately, it gets better. As for Buffy versus Dracula, a fun episode with dark undertones. Did you notice that Dracula says to Buffy the exact same words that used by Tara / the First Slayer in Restless? You think you know what's to come, what you are. You haven't even begun. I have a question for the super fans. Do you intend to point out each time a prediction from Restless comes through in future episodes? And I think we will try our best. We pointed out one or two in this episode. So as we remember them, we will try to point them out when they see that. But that is a great point about that line from Dracula that kind of ties into what we were talking about in the last episode, of that the themes from Restless really translated into the Buffy versus Dracula episode.
I mean, surely you need like a checklist from a Wikia at this point to understand everything that was happening in Restless, like Cheese Man actually saves Buffy, check, because I don't know how you're going to keep track of all of them.
Some are more widely discussed than others, like the Be Back Before Dawn, so those we definitely remember.
I've
been hammering that little Miss Muffet part into my head for the past like year or so.
If we miss any, though, be sure to let us know and we'll read it, but we're not going to keep them a secret by any means. All right, and to wrap up, we will finish up with Mitch's musings and Kristen's contemplations for Buffy 503, The Replacement, and Angel 203, First Impressions. So Mitch and Kristen, The Replacement.
Are we replacing another sibling that Buffy had with Dawn? I mean, I don't know. The Replacement has to do with Dawn, right?
I'm going to predict that The Replacement is all about Giles and the shop, since he is replacing the old shop owner, and it's just them, like, getting the shop up and, like, replacing the library with the back room and all of that fun stuff. So that's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah, because it might be a little bit too early to actually see the revelation of who or what Dawn really is. So I think we might be waiting a couple more weeks for that. Maybe, like, did they have mid-season finales back then? I don't know if they did.
I think the Dawn question's going to fester a little longer before we get any answers, so
like season finale, do you think? That would be a long time to wait for that.
Maybe not that far, but we'll get a couple more episodes of her just hanging out before we start to figure out what she is and how she's there.
Maybe you become attached to her before she's evil.
Yeah.
Okay, I can dig that. First impressions, that could be anything. That's very open. Why don't we say it's, you know, what would make sense if this is like a bit of a play on not words, but on the situation where this could be like Darla and Angel meeting up with each other for the first time in a while. Like there's their first impressions of the new worlds together. That could make sense.
Good call. Good call. I was also going to go with like, it may just be an episode full of first impressions, like new clients seeing the new place and like getting a feel for them, and the Angel Investigations team like getting their first impression of working out of the hotel and all of that, like just, you know, getting situated and everybody reacting to the new surroundings and all of that.
Yeah, and while I miss like the old Angel's basement apartment swankiness, I think I'm gonna get into this whole hotel business if we start having people live in it and more extras can fill the background. It'll be more fun. So, yeah, I'll be excited for those first impressions, too, of all the characters we get to meet out of Gunn's group, assumedly.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, well, we'll have to see how your predictions turn out. So, until next week, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Mitch.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.